This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back to Wells Tech, everybody. This is episode 464 for Tuesday, September 27th, 2016. My name is Martin Spriggs. This is a show about technology, ministry, and where those two intersect. And we're so glad that you decided to join us once again. Very special episode this week. You can see that perhaps we're missing my regular podcasting buddy, Sally Draper. Unfortunately, there was a death in the family. Actually, it was a death in her husband's family. 95-year-old grandmother lived many years and now is with her Lord. So they are, Sally and Kevin are on their way over to Michigan for the funeral. But never fear, we have a new semi-regular classroom technology correspondent joining us, and that's Rachel Feld. Hey, Rachel.
Hey, Martin. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. End of the school day, ready to talk about some exciting
stuff. Ready to have a podcast. What better way to close out a school day than have a podcast?
Exactly.
Before we get to you and your information and what you're going to do for us, all the wonderful things that you're going to bring to the table, I want to extend a heartfelt thank you on behalf of Sally and myself to Gail Potratz, who was a member of this show. We had her on about every other month, and for a while there, every month, to talk about ed tech issues. Gail serves and still does serve up at Emmanuel in New London, but she is retiring this year and decided that with all that and an opportunity to move to a new start in that position, she bowed out, and we're really, really thankful for all of her years of service. She brought a lot of great stuff to us, and we wish her well and the Lord's blessings. So thank you, Gail, if you're watching or listening. But now we have Rachel. And Rachel, you serve at, is it Trinity in Kenosha? Bethany.
Yes.
Which one is it?
Bethany Lutheran.
Bethany. Okay, Bethany in Kenosha. For those who don't know their southeastern Wisconsin geography very well, where is Kenosha?
We are right on the lake. We're between Chicago and Milwaukee. So it's a nice little, you know, you go north, you get some exciting things. You go south, you get even more exciting things. So it's a fun place to be.
How long have you been there?
This is my 11th year here and my 11th year of teaching. I was assigned here straight from MLC and haven't left yet. So that's how great it is. I love it here.
Tell us a little bit about the school and what you do there.
Sure. We are a K-8 school. I teach first and second grade. I've got 19 little ones this year. We just finished up our 21st day of school, so that was exciting. And we've got usually around 80 kids, 5 full-time teachers, 2 full-time pastors, and just bought some new land for a potential new school in a couple of years. So there's a lot of fun stuff happening, and it's a joy to serve here.
Wonderful. Tell us a little bit about yourself and some of the stuff you're involved in these days. I know that you were taking classes at WLC, Wisconsin Lutheran College, for a while. You're working on some other stuff, right?
Yeah. I graduated. Now it's two Mays ago, so 2 years ago, with a master's in instructional technology. And I am currently right at the midpoint of my first class to get my doctorate. So that's been
awesome.
Really exciting trying to manage all of those things, but it's going pretty well so far. The kids like to hear about how their teacher has homework when she goes home too.
Yes, you can relate.
Yeah. I've showed them a couple of times. This is what Ms. Feld's homework looks like, and their eyes get real big and suddenly reading their reading story doesn't seem so bad.
What kind of doctorate are you after?
I'm going to online, so it's all online, to Concordia, Chicago, used to be Concordia River Forest.
Right.
And it will be a educational doctorate in educational technology leadership.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about what that means. What kind of classes are involved with that? So if we get a little bit better picture of what that is like.
Sure. First class is all about how to effectively make a change. So that's been very interesting. A lot of my classmates are from larger school districts, so they hear about my 5-person faculty and get really confused. But it's been good to hear about that too. And my next couple of classes will have a lot to do with just managing teams and how to implement technology, and especially how to be a leader in pushing technology out or doing professional development for schools. And that's something I really enjoy doing. So I'm looking forward to learning more about how to do it effectively.
Well, blessings on that. We look forward to someday calling you Dr. Feld.
Someday.
You also have done some work for the Senate and the WELSA program, right?
I have, yes. That was my culminating project at WLC for that master's, was integrating some Google Apps type of things into the WELSA process. So if any of those listening have ever worked with WELSA, been on a visiting team, or done some work for their own school's accreditation, I've put together quite a few resources and documents that are being used and shared. If you are in the middle of getting accredited right now and are looking for some help, please shoot me an email, because I've got some stuff that can be pretty helpful to schools, I think. The visiting teams use a spreadsheet that I developed to track all the standards and those kinds of things. And I'll be presenting on that at Wisconsin State Teachers Conference.
Coming up later in October, right?
Should probably get
on nice.
Pretty soon.
Well, Sally and I were really pleased that you agreed to do this, given your busy schedule and, you know, just beyond the teaching, just being a first and second grade teacher, I'm sure keeps you very busy. But going to school and all the other irons you have in the fire, we really appreciate you taking the time every other month to join us and talk about educational technology. One thing I was really excited about is the grades that you teach. When we had Gail, and she was mostly upper grades, and you are definitely in the lower grade realm, and I'm sure there's a lot of teachers out there who will be interested to hear how you have implemented or plan on implementing technology at that level. So maybe a broad question, so your 19 first and second graders, what does technology look like in grades 1 and 2?
Well, we've got a Promethean board in our classroom.
How is that different than maybe a smart board? Is there same technology, or has it got a different approach?
Pretty much the same thing. It doesn't have any touch capabilities. You have to use the markers that come with it.
Okay.
And also, it runs a different software.
Right, of course.
So instead of smart notebook, it's got Active Inspire. Uh-huh. So you have to look different places for whatever content you're using, but the kids definitely like whenever they get a chance to go up to the board, do a lot of sound sorts and building words and using cute websites so they can build words with magnetic letters on the refrigerator and that kind of stuff. So we use that multiple times a day. And we've got iPads in our classroom. I've had 5 in my classroom for the last... I think it's been 4 years now.
Okay.
And this summer we bought another 12, so that puts me up to 17. And as soon as I get them up and running, we will be doing all sorts of cool things with them. That's been a little bit of a struggle, but we'll get there.
So you had 5, and now you added 12, so that means that you have some additional issues with management, so you're actually using them differently, so that there's a it's not one per child per se, but it's pretty close. So does that mean you have to use some management console or some kind of application to kind of keep them up to speed and running appropriately? What kind of issues are you having?
Well, I started out with using Meraki on multi-device management system, which is really cool. But I tried to do it without using the Apple School Manager, and that was not my best idea. Okay. So I've been backtracking a little bit and trying to get them all managed under the Apple School Manager. And that's where I'm currently waiting for some people at Apple to email me back, because I confused a lot of people with my login issues. So hopefully pretty soon they'll be able to iron that out and I can keep going.
What will that give you?
That will allow me to very easily push out apps to all the iPads. So with just a few clicks of the button on my computer, all the iPads will get whatever app I want them to have. With the new school manager that Apple has put out, because I think that's new. Yeah, you've got it up there. I think that's just with this last iOS update. There are a lot more features that I probably won't be making use of just yet, because we're not a true one-to-one environment. But you can now have Apple IDs for individual students, so that they can be saving things in iCloud and do a lot more, I say, Google-ish type of things. It seems like Apple is trying to catch up in the realm of Chromebooks, which was really needed. So that's very good to see. And hopefully we can keep adding to our iPad collection so that we can get to be one-to-one and I can use some more of those features that Apple has put together.
The other classrooms there at Bethany, are they iPad based as well? Are they using Chromebooks? What other technologies are available?
We put the iPads in a mobile cart so that it can be wheeled down to kindergarten or used in the other classrooms as well. The big push behind getting the iPads is we started the Project Lead the Way curriculum for STEM education, and that requires iPads. So that was the push there. Our grades 6 to 8 have been one-to-one with Chromebooks for the past 4 years also.
Okay.
So they're kind of on the Chromebook sides of things, but since Project Lead the Way, we're doing the launch program for the younger kids, and that requires iPads.
Well, so you've got a lot of technologies going on there. And I think in general, iPads probably are more suitable, would you agree, for the lower grades than the upper grades?
I would agree, definitely. Not that you can't use iPads in upper grades or Chromebooks with smaller kids, but just using their fingers for that tactile interaction really lends itself well to the little kids. And even if you look through the apps, there are really great apps for the little kids. Just it's hard for kids to get that hand-eye coordination to do a touchpad or a mouse. That's a hard skill. And also just typing can be tricky for kids. So using a touch interface where you don't have to worry about those things as much is really beneficial for the younger ones.
So do you ruggedize them in any way? Do they have cases so they're kind of drop proof? And that would be my concern, especially at that age and that expensive a device too.
Yes, that is actually a big concern. I'll stick a link in the show notes to the ones that I actually use, because we got them on Amazon. My first set of iPads we had, they're called Big Grips, and they're essentially just a really big picture frame made out of some squishy material that went all the way around. And I quite clearly remember in the first week of having iPads watching a kid drop it on the floor and my heart like stopping because, you know, I had just gotten brand new iPads and I'm going to have to take it to my principal and say it's broken. And it bounced. It bounced right back and it was totally fine. I've actually never had to deal with a broken iPad.
Okay.
We went with
something. Knock on wood. Yeah.
We went with something slightly less rugged, but also slightly less expensive for now our 12 new ones, just because we've seen so little in the way of issues. It's still a big, you know, frame around it. And these actually have a handle on them. So you can flip it to make it a little stand, and the kids have something they can hold on to when they're carrying it around. So
I suppose you've already thought about curriculum and how you're going to use them since you've already had five, but it changes the game a little bit when you've got one for almost everybody. In what way does that change how you'll be able to teach?
I'm looking forward to being able to do some more individualized things. There are some awesome just basic skill apps for math facts or spelling or reading fluency that the kids can grab and do as an activity on their own. I'm also really looking forward to them being able to be very creative individually. So we did some of that before, but they had to do it in larger groups.
Right.
So one of my favorite apps is Book Creator, and it's really simple. They just create books, but it's an awesome way for them to show what they've learned in any subject matter. And we've done that with science. We've done it with social studies. We've done it in our Christlight lessons. We've done it all over the place. And the kids really love it. And then they can save their books on their iPads, and they can all, like, share and read each other's books. So they really enjoy that.
Okay. Well, we are going to look forward to future conversations with you and seeing how that's going within your classroom. I bet you're excited, and I think our listeners would be excited as well. Other technologies that you have in the class, what about parent communications? How do you stay in touch with them? That's always a very important thing, especially at that age. How do you handle that?
Yeah, my classroom website is one place that I use Google Sites for that.
Okay.
Because I've found it really simple to keep updated. If you link in some folders and things, it makes it easy to just update by moving files around. I use MailChimp for a weekly classroom newsletter, which parents really like. And last year, we actually went and started using MailChimp for the whole school newsletter as well.
Okay, makes sense.
So we've found that to be really beneficial, that parents can pull it up on whatever device they've got. MailChimp allows you to make an archive with just a few clicks, and it'll automatically post your most recent one to your website in an archive form. So you don't even have to update your website. MailChimp will do it for you, which is really nice.
And at the volumes that we're talking about in most of our schools, it's basically a free product, right?
Yes, it is. Cool. Even better than free, because you're saving a lot of paper.
That's right. Right. It's kind of a no-brainer, I think, for a lot of schools at this point, and congregations, too, trying to figure out how to communicate to members. Maybe the last area of technology we can talk about, we don't need to talk about everything because we know you're going to come on in a couple of months again. We can catch up then. But what do you use for planning, your own personal planning or classroom planning? Do you use any apps for that?
I do. I tell you, I think I've been through every app possible for planning because I'm just never quite happy. But I started using a new one this year, and I think I might have found my favorite. I might actually stick with it. So that's really exciting. Rachel Pearson, Wells Tech friend, actually recommended it to me. It's from chalk.com, and it's called PlanBoard. And I really like it because it looks like your traditional plan book, like you would buy in the teacher's store and fill in your little squares. When I was cleaning this summer, I actually found mine from my first year of teaching, and it was fun to go through. So you've got everything all laid out and follows your schedule. but then you put in your lessons, and if you don't get to that lesson that particular day, you can just kick it forward, and it kicks all the rest of your lessons forward. You can do really awesome linking. It will integrate with your Google Drive. So if you've got things saved there, or you can just stick a link to a video if you're going to show a particular video. On the screen now that you can set what standards that you are going to be following. And my favorite part is that you can reuse whatever plans you've made to next year. So that has always been my biggest annoyance with lesson planning.
Starting over, right?
Yes, yeah. Is I don't want to start from scratch every year. Mm-hmm. And I always felt with a paper book, that's what I was doing. And then I, you know, used a few other apps, which kind of worked. So the big test will be next year to see how well it works starting over again and putting, you know, reusing the classes. I will say I have chatted with Mr. Chalk there a couple of times, asked him some questions. You can see him on the bottom there. And yeah. All the people I've talked to have been really helpful. So that's always nice to know, too.
So it's a paid for application, or what are you in for with this?
It is also free. There is a premium version, which I tried out and could not really see any benefit. There was some sharing things going on in the paid version, which I was wondering if by doing that I could easily share them with my principal, but it seemed to be more of a sharing individual lessons with like the whole plan book community.
Right.
Which is not something I really wanted to pay for at this point. So. Right.
Okay. And looks like it's mobile friendly. So it looks like they have an iPad and iPhone version. So.
Yes. Also super awesome.
So a couple questions I need to ask you because Sally would want me to ask you. Mac or PC?
I love Pinterest.
I wasn't even going to ask Pinterest, but I'm glad you brought that up. And that's probably a rhetorical question if I ask any female teacher if they use Pinterest, because the answer can always be yes. That's at least my wife would say. So Mac or PC?
I have been a Mac since I started teaching.
Is that right? So okay.
I have been, yep.
And the other question is ebooks or paper books?
Oh, see, that is a really tough one. A lot of it depends on price.
Okay, I can go along with that.
Book. For my classes, I have traditionally been going with buying a printed book because you can, you know, highlight and stick your sticky notes in and all that kind of stuff, which is just not the same in an ebook. But there have been a lot of times when I've been writing a paper and really needed a book, and the Kindle version is right there. So I've gone with that too. So I'm okay with both, depending
on the
situation.
Politically correct answer. Thanks. All right. I think we've gotten to know Rachel a little bit. Thank you for sharing that, Rachel. And again, I look forward to having further conversations about your technology and ministry stuff. And again, thanks for taking the commitment, or taking on the commitment, just another one of joining us. So let's move along to our next segment, and that is what we call news in tech. And so we try and find an article that is of general interest that may have an impact on folks. And this one in particular, our news in tech this time, I think affected a lot of people, and that's news out of Yahoo that they had a security breach. Go figure. 500 million user accounts were stolen by what is called a state-sponsored actor at the end of 2014. State-sponsored actor sounds like a foreign government, I think. So 500 million users is a lot of users. And so one thing I did yesterday at Yahoo's suggestion and all the tech media's suggestion was change my password. Yahoo is not something, I don't know about you, Rachel, but Yahoo is not something that I use a lot. I do use Flickr. And that's a Yahoo property. So I guess it was probably something that I should have done a long time ago, but I hadn't changed my password for that site, Yahoo site, in absolutely forever. How about you? You a Yahoo user? Did you change your password?
I have not used Yahoo, I don't think, since maybe high school. So I have gotten a few emails of people trying to get into my Yahoo account. So I've taken steps to delete the account because I don't need it anymore. But beyond that, I haven't used it in a very long time.
Yeah, I just haven't found enough there to have it occupy a spot on my browser toolbar bookmark. So that's our news in tech. I think we can move along to our Wells Now segment. And we had a request this week through Sally, I think, that somebody was looking for a speaker, a technology speaker, educational technology speaker. And one of the things that might be good to get on your radar, especially if you are in the upper Midwest, if you're looking for a technology speaker for a district convention or conference or in-service or event speaker, is MLC's Speakers Bureau. It's part of their public relations page. They have a whole page or section of their website for finding the appropriate speakers on all kinds of different topics. So they have all of the disciplines, all the educational disciplines, art, language arts, science, special ed, mathematics, religion, it's of course school leadership, all kinds of different topics, and then some that are squarely in the technology area, instructional technology or technology, and it's all categorized. You simply click on the links. If I were looking for somebody to come in and speak on technology, I can find a number of potential topics: enhancing the curriculum with technology by James Grinwald, Google Apps for Education, Chrome Extensions by James Karlosky, both we've had on the show recently, Online Learning, Smart Board Use, Technology in PE with Daniel Gabrish, who was also on the show previously. So a great resource if you're looking for a speaker on most any educational topic, technology or otherwise. So we'll put a link to the site in our show notes, but if you, again, you're interested in some speakers, and they probably would travel if you would pay travel to further remoter distances, but a great resource that we have there in our teacher and pastor training school. So that's great really resource cool. to take advantage of. What's that?
That's really cool. I'm on the planning committee for our district teachers conference and haven't seen that before, so that's a great resource for teachers.
They've done a nice job. It looks like they keep it up to date. It's real easy to get access, and what I really like is they give a nice little description of the presentation, including length, potential length, what's needed if they need internet or projector or screen, internet, that kind of stuff. So they give you all the information you're going to need to know if you need to plug something into a spot, so take advantage of that. That's cool.
Very useful.
Yep. Now, Rachel, we've come to the point in the show, as you're probably aware, that we call our Picks of the Week, and we always let our regular, semi-regular classroom technology correspondents lead the way, and that's not going to be any different now that you are on the show. Do you have a pick this week?
I do have a pick. I kept it back when you asked about my parent communication in the classroom, because there's something brand new that I am just trying out this year, and Martin will put it up for me there. It's called Blooms, B-L-O-O-M-Z. And it has, a lot of teachers I think are familiar with a service called Remind, and it's a lot like that, but it adds some even better features. It's a way to connect to all of your parents. It's got a calendar that you can have a class calendar that everyone can look at. You can do individual messages. You can do group messages. You can share pictures. That was a big one for me because I'm always looking for an easy way for me to show parents what's going on in my classroom. But I'm also very cognizant that many parents don't want their students' picture all over the internet, which I
understand.
So this app, it's a website, it's also got mobile apps, I can put in all my parents' email addresses and they can make an account and then I can control who has access. So I've got some grandmas and grandpas who have wanted access and that's just fine, but I always make sure I figure out who I'm granting access to before they have our account. They just need a little code that they put in to join our class, and it basically looks kind of like Facebook. And you can put in some updates and text updates or picture updates. I have heard that video updates are coming pretty soon. And
yep, that's what it says there, video support.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can do instant messaging with parents. So if you don't want to give out your phone number for texting, they can do that. You can also, the parents can communicate with each other. And it will do parent-teacher meeting signups. It will do volunteer signups. If you're having a class party and you don't want six people bringing cups and no one bringing plates, you can have it do that for you. You can have a parent kind of classroom mom who has a little more control and can post some things himself or herself. It does a classroom dojo type behavior management. That part I have not used at all, but I hear it's on there. And it also will do a portfolio, so a digital portfolio to share with parents of what their kids are doing in school. Basically, the creators are wanting to take all of the different services that teachers use to communicate with parents, all the apps and extensions and whatnot, and put it into one product. And that's what's really nice, is I'm not having to go to one thing for one sharing and then go someplace else to do something else. I'm actually considering not using MailChimp anymore and just doing this.
Right. I was going to ask that, if that was kind of the approach.
Just so that parents don't have to, you know, sign up for two different things.
Mm-hmm. So. Very cool. Cost?
Free.
Wow.
Okay. Free is good. You can also have your principal sign up or administrator, whoever, sign up the whole school so that all the parents are just kind of in there without having each teacher having to do their own account. And a really nice feature is if the parents, or if I put in parent email addresses, they automatically get an email when I post something, whether they sign up for the their own account or not. Because one of the issues I had with the Remind service was that parents, if they didn't sign up, they didn't get whatever I sent out.
Mm-hmm.
So here I can put the email addresses in there. They can't see some of the cool features, but at least if I'm posting an announcement, they'll get it.
Very cool. So do they get at this through a website or through an app or both?
They can do both. They can also, if they want to just use the email, they can just get email. I've had, I think, about 90% of my parents sign up. And so far, everything is positive. There's nothing better.
So you just started that this year.
I did. Yep. Okay. There's nothing better than sharing a few pictures of what's going on in the classroom with parents. They just love to see that.
Awesome. And that's Blooms, BLOOMZ.com. We'll put a link in the show notes as well. And we're going to share our video of the week will be a kind of a Blooms introduction. So if you're interested in just kind of seeing how it works, it looks really neat, Rachel. So you'll have to let us know how that goes throughout the course of the school year. So very cool. My pick of the week is actually a couple picks, and it's for you iOS users, these iPhone and iPad users. And as I get on in my advanced years, I've found that I need to make some changes to how I use my phone or tablet in areas of usability, especially text size. And so I've got a couple of tips here on how to make the iPhone a little bit more accessible for those of us that maybe need reading glasses once in a while or other helpers. Let me pull up my screen share here. And I came across a good article from iMore. iMore.com is everything Apple. So they talk about Macs and iPads and iPhones. And they have a nice little tutorial here about how to adjust the iOS text size. So a lot of apps will support this. So you can go into settings, and there is on the general tab a text size option where you can bump up the text size. You could actually bump it down too. It goes both ways. That will increase the text size for most of the apps that support it, which is really cool. And there is a lot of flexibility here. You can increase the size of the text, lots of different ways to kind of make the iPhone and some of these smaller screens a little bit more useful. Actually, it's in the display and brightness setting, so you just click text size or text adjustment, and away you go. You can try it out. It doesn't require any restart or anything, and you have the ability to kind of give yourself a more pleasant reading experience. It doesn't work on every site I've found. It does work on many apps, though. So if you have an email app, which is commonly where I would be challenged to read a lot of text, it will do the text size adjustment there. It will work on some websites, and again, other apps that are made to take advantage of this. So really makes a difference and allows me to have a better experience overall on the iPhone. I have a second kind of a 1A pick, and iOS 10, I believe, I don't know if this is in 9 or not, I think it's iOS 10, which just came out, also has a new feature called Magnifier, or at least it's a modified feature. I think it's improved and maybe was there in the past. You get this, again, going to Settings, General, and this one's under the Accessibility tab, Magnifier. You can turn it on, and the way you access the magnifier, there's a keyboard shortcut, so to speak. If you press the home button 3 times, and if you press the home button once, you go back to the home screen. If you press it twice, you have the loaded apps or active apps screen, so you can multitask or multi-switch. But if you press it 3 times, up comes this magnifier. And the way it works is it's obviously digital magnifying glass, but it uses your camera, and it will increase the size of anything you point that camera at. One of the nice things about this app is it allows you to turn the flashlight on. So if you're in a dimly lit area, restaurants are typical use cases, for me at least, where it's nice to turn the flashlight on and the magnifier on, and I can actually read what I could eat at a particular restaurant. They have filters that help you differentiate colors. It allows you to snap a photo so that you can zoom around and you don't have to keep the camera or the light on if you're in, let's say, an area where that's probably not kosher. But a really good app for reading the fine print, so to speak. So two little tips for those of us that maybe need some helpers. One is the iOS text size adjustment feature that's built right in. And the other is the remodeled iOS magnifier. Rachel, you probably would not have those issues, but I struggle with that all the time.
Well, you know, I've turned it on for a few of my friends, and the text magnifier works in text in the iMessage app.
And right. Yeah, that's a perfect application for it, because that can get really small. I think that's probably one of the best use cases for it. So, yep, good thought. All right, let's move on to our next segment, and that is ministry resources. And we are in the season of the Reformation. We're in October, not quite at the 500-year celebration yet, but good apps are available, and one of them, related to Reformation comes from LutheranReformation.org. That is a site produced, I don't know if it's by the Missouri Synod, but it's definitely by somebody in the Missouri Synod. They've made an app called the Reformation Flannel Graph. Visually teach the story of the Reformation in the classroom or the living room through five stories. Luther as a child, Luther as a monk, Luther post-theses, of course, Luther at Wartburg Castle, and Luther's Rose. So there's a flannel graph app that is available online. I think this plays fine on an iPad as well, or even a smart board probably, where you just click and drag the symbols or the, I don't know what they're called on a flannel graph, the image, the icon, whatever it is. You can just create your own little flannel graph, a digital flannel graph of the Reformation. It's really easy to use. You can go to different scenes and play with the different step-by-steps that they provide there. They actually give you some nice directions as a teacher or a Sunday school teacher talks you through the story, when to put the pieces on the flannel graph board by scene, just very specific directions, and then what to talk about after the story. So kind of a nice little lesson plan here that teaches in picture form the story of Martin Luther and the Reformation. I would think this might have application in first and second grade even.
Oh, definitely. I tell you, that's the typical set that I think every classroom has, and that looks like the wording that comes with it. I had scanned all my flannel pieces to make them images so that I could use the flannel pieces on my Promethean board. Mm-hmm. That's way easier. That's going right into my technology and Christlight presentation for teachers' conference.
Right. Awesome. So that's a resource that you might want to take advantage of, especially in the month of October. All right, I mentioned the featured video before. That's our last segment, and we just found a Bloom's overview, one of the Rachel's pick this week, and I think you'll enjoy that. We put these in playlists, so if you're interested in kind of seeing other like videos, so we have a product demos playlist, we have music playlist, we have a bunch of playlists related to the show that you may want to take advantage of. We'll put those links in the show notes. You can take advantage of those. But if you're interested in Bloom's, take a look at this link in particular, and gives just a real brief intro and see if Bloom's might be for you. Rachel, thanks so much for joining us. You didn't know you'd have to fill in for Sally as well, but you did an awesome job, and we really look forward to having you come back every other month. Next month, we'll be doing the Jason Schmidt Show. I think you're a nice complement to what Jason brings to the table as well, so thanks so much for agreeing to do this.
No problem. It's going to be fun.
I bet. Next week, we hopefully will have Sally back, and we're going to be talking about privacy. The whole Yahoo thing is not the only thing that is threatening our privacy, so there are opportunities for us to find some resources for you. We found a great article from Consumer Reports entitled 66 Ways to Protect Your Privacy Rights Now. So we're not going to go through all 66, but we're going to cherry pick the good ones, ones that are really super useful in our ministry context, and talk through some of those and how those might make a difference in making you feel a little bit more comfortable with your data online. Once again, thank you, Rachel, for joining us. Thank all of you for joining us. Please tell a friend that we are on each and every week. We've been doing this for 400 and some odd weeks, and there's always room for more people to join. If you want to leave a comment or a suggestion, certainly can go to our show notes page, wellstech.wells.net. Leave a voicemail. Send us an email, wellstech@wells.net. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Google+, all the usual places. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.